Hi, this is Jonathan from Lewis Jewelers. If you're in the market for a diamond, we can make the experience easy and stress-free. Not to mention, we can save you time and money. As a general manager, one of my roles is to hand-select every diamond that comes into our store. Don't shop alone. Come see me or one of my trusted advisors and find the perfect diamond today. Where Ann Arbor gets engaged, Lewis Jewelers.
And welcome back to another edition of The Wolverine Live. I'm John Borton, and you don't see Tom Crawford tonight. Shout out to him. Feeling a little under the weather tonight, but we have a special treat about which the Wolverine faithful were very, very excited when I announced that today. We have in our midst one Wayman Britt, star of the mid-1970s basketball teams for Michigan. Now, I believe, Kent County Administrator over on the western side of the state. Someone who was talented enough and versatile enough that he was drafted not only by the NBA, but by the NFL. Wayman Britt, we've been excited about this. Welcome to the Wolverine Live.
Oh, John, thank you for having me on today, and it's great to see you. Just a disclaimer here. I retired from Kent County back in July 31 of 2021. Oh. So for the folks that didn't know that, and now I have my own company, Wayman Britt Enterprises, that I'm running, and got a lot of fun stuff that we've been up to. So,
well, I appreciate you bringing me up to date there. I knew that you had a lot of things going, and didn't you write a book?
Yes, wrote the book, Fulfilling the Dream, My Path to Leadership and Finding Purpose Through Serving Others, just out in October, and we're very happy with it. It's on Audible and Apple and Amazon. People can get it on my website and so forth, WBE Books, and very pleased with it. We've done a number of signings and hope to do a few more, and really getting a good response from it, and really having a lot of fun.
Well, excellent. You are... certainly. Hey, there we go. There's the book now. We had great, like I said, great response to you being on. People have such good memories. Our more veteran fans remembering those days, and certainly I do. A couple things I want to talk about from your playing days. One, I mean, I threw out there that you were drafted not only by the NFL, but also, or not only by the NBA, but also by the NFL. How does somebody do that? I'm sure our younger people are looking at that and say, how did that happen?
Well, it was all due to the fact that I worked my butt off. And I guess people that would come to the game, like Bo Schembechler and others, found that I had a pretty good, good way of backing up and playing defense, being agile and so forth. And they looked at that and said it's a transferable skill and felt that, you know, if he can do that on the hard court, he can do that in an NFL. So people were looking at me right from day one. Bo Schembechler wanted me out twice for his team, and I told him no. Unfortunately, I didn't realize who Bo Schembechler was at the time. If I'd known now, I probably would have played for him. Such a great all-time coach for the football team. But my prowess on defense was exceptional, I guess. And people like Bart Starr and George Allen, others looked at me and wanted me to come to them. In fact, I was looked at by the Lions, the Packers, Cowboys, and the Redskins back in the day.
Pretty amazing. And it shows the level of not only versatility, but skill and toughness and a whole lot of things that went into your playing career. Yeah. You know, when you look at that and then you got drafted by the Lakers, your thoughts about your post Michigan days and your getting into the business world eventually.
Yeah. Well, back in the day when I was drafted, the NBA and the ABA were both entities. ABA was just struggling big time. And so I was drafted fourth round. Unfortunately, I didn't stick with the Lakers. I was cut right at the end of the exhibition season. And the Pistons had my rights. And of course, I was allowed then back into the NBA the next year. But unfortunately, that didn't work out either, you know. At the time, the salaries weren't at the levels they are today. And they weren't making any money until Magic and Isaiah and Jordan, those guys came along, Larry Bird, until they came along. So really, it wasn't really the kind of career you could bank your life on. So I made a decision to stick with my career that I'd started at Steelcase and gave up the whole idea of playing professional sports because there just wasn't any solid future there.
Well, it sure worked out. Obviously, you've done great things in your career. You did great things in your Michigan career. The one of the ones that people always remember, I believe, when you were a senior and that team came that close to winning it all and after the championship game. Talk about that season a little bit and what you remember from that.
We had a wonderful team. We were fast. We were really, really good. I mean, Indiana was the top team in the Big Ten that year, and they knew that we had their number. We almost beat them twice, you know, that year, especially down in Bloomington. We played them. I think we got beat by like 1 point at the buzzer, a tip in. Maybe it went into overtime. Not sure now, but we were a great team. We weren't as tall and as brawny and strong as that team, but we were quick. We were fast. We had Ricky Green, Steve Grody, Johnny Robinson, Phil Hubbard. We were the five starters, and we were to be reckoned with. And it showed. You know, we beat Rutgers, who had been undefeated with Phil Sellers in the semifinal game in the NCAA. And of course, we had beaten Notre Dame that same year, Adrian Dantley's team. You know, we weren't playing against any slouches.
Sure.
So to get to where we were pretty decent. You know, Phil Hubbard's numbers retired. Ricky Green played in the NBA for quite a while. Mm-hmm. And you know, Grody and I both were both drafted. He was drafted by the Cleveland Cavaliers, I believe, and I was drafted by the Lakers and played a little bit with the Pistons. So. You know, we were a great team. It just happened that Indiana was just so much bigger and stronger, and they had a lot of depth with Abernathy and those guys. Steve, what's his name? I think it's Steve Kerr. I forget his name. Young man that came off the bench, but they had a strong team with Buckner and Wilkerson and Scott May and Kent Benson and those guys. They were like men. You know, they were men already.
And a coach that made a name for himself eventually.
Bobby Knight. Bobby, the infamous Bobby Knight, the guy that
was
fear into the hearts of any referee. He would control those games, man. He was a great coach. Yeah. He, along with Al McGuire, and Digger Phelps. Those were three great coaches. And, you know, John Wood, we went up against John Wooden's team when I was a freshman. My sophomore year, played them at Pauley Pavilion. So we had an opportunity to play with some wonderful coaches, play against some wonderful teams and coaches.
No doubt. You mentioned Ricky Green. I still go back and forth with one of my colleagues, Chris Ballas, and you know, he mentions about how Trey Burke is his all-time top Michigan point guard, and I say, okay, I hear you, what you're saying. And he was National Player of the Year, and he was very, very good. But man, you want to talk about somebody that could get to from one end of the court to the other faster than almost anybody I've ever seen. That's Ricky Green.
He had speed. He had overdrive speed. He could dribble both balls, both hands down the court faster than anybody that I'd ever met and played with. You know, the guy was just he was a sprinter. And you know, Trey Burke was a great player too. You know, he had the hops.
Oh, yeah.
I think he had probably better hops than Ricky, but Ricky Green was the fastest player that I think we've had in some time. There have been some other ones, and he was strong too for a point guard. He was pretty strong, so he could hold his own. He could get down the court.
So when you look back at your Michigan days, how did that all kind of play into where you went from there, and whether it be in sports, in business, how did it affect your life?
Well, it gifted me with the ability to work with people and to be able to deal with difficult situations. Playing forward at Michigan at 6'1¾ inches tall and playing against some of the best guys in the country taught me a lesson that, you know, anything's possible if you put your mind to it, your work, your plan, and never feel that the opposing team or players any better than you. I had the attitude that UCLA was no better, Notre Dame was no better, Marquette was no better than we were. That was the attitude that I had. And so we went up against guys, you know, it, I think, strengthened my belief, number one, in myself and my abilities, but also this idea that you can achieve any goal that you set out to do. I would do special things. I would run before practice and so on and so forth, the extra things. You know, it was a lot of discipline that we put into that team that year. And it taught me how to lead. I was the captain of the team. It carried over into my life at Steelcase and at Kent County. And I truly felt that the kind of environment that we had, which, you know, Michigan, at the end of the day, has a wonderful athletic program, academic program. And so when you come out of there, you're one of the best in the country, in the world. You are. You become one of the better people ready for any challenge that comes along your way. So I know that was a unique opportunity to have gone to Michigan, played at Michigan, been around some of the best professors, coaches, people. You know, it just prepared me for the world, and very grateful for having the opportunity to be, you know, to have started there for 4 years. I started mid-season as a freshman, and it just gave me that extra edge. You know, I was born to be a leader, and it just grew me into even being a better leader.
Yeah, well, we so many people weighed in when, like I said, when they knew you were going to be on, they said, "Great, great person, great." I have such fond memories of his playing days, and so, like I said, very thrilled to have you on with us. And I know from talking to you some and listening to you over the years that you know not just Michigan basketball, but you know Michigan football as well. So we're going to be talking a little bit about both of those tonight.
Yeah, I would love to. Yeah, I've been watching them all year. It's a wonderful team. I'm so grateful I got a chance to hang out with Jim Harbaugh this summer. He came to Grand Rapids, me and Jim Hackett, you know, Ford Foundation. So, yeah, it was great. It was great. Great year. I loved it.
Yep. Well, then you will, I'm sure, be one of those who is will be glad, relieved, whatever, along with a lot of Michigan fans when Michigan and Jim Harbaugh finally inked the contract.
Yes.
We'll be talking about football in a little bit, but I want to start with basketball because we're in the middle of basketball season, and you know it's a little bit of a rough go for Michigan right now. They are really struggling. Pretty much blown out at Penn State the other night.
Yeah.
And my question to you is, as you see this team, as it's going right now and as it's struggling, is this a season that that Juwan Howard and this team can salvage?
I don't think so. I just watching them over the past 3-4 games, the Purdue game and then Penn State game recently, you just see that they just have not matured and grown to the point that they're ready to go up against the guys that are as good as them in the league. They just don't have the confidence. They don't have the kind of, I would say, the grit and determination, the cockiness, we had that. And a lot of teams have had that. Jalen Rose's team, you know, they had that in spades. They don't have that. They have maybe at times some players that operate that way, where they know and they believe that they can challenge anyone. I just don't see that happening. It seems like they're looking for someone on the team to become the leader, and I don't see that happening. It's just not in the team. They're just a great, great bunch of guys, nice kids, but when it comes to playing against the best in the country, you got to have a different gear, and I don't see that coming out of them.
So is that at least in part a matter of experience? I mean, you, like you said, you played as a freshman. They're playing a lot of young guys, but they have a guy that you would think would be the guy to rally around, be the leader in Hunter Dickinson. So where does this come? Where does the leadership and the cockiness or both come from?
He's a gentle giant from my standpoint. He has it from time to time, but you know, he's limited. You know, he has great skills, but he's just one of these kids who's gifted in certain ways. And that's maybe not one of the ways that he's truly gifted. I mean, in fact, I would much rather see that coming out of a guard or a forward, you know, someone who has control of the ball, who is out front dealing with, you know, attacking the offense right up front. Those are the kinds of people that you really want to see that in. The center, okay, that's a luxury, but you really want to see that in the guard play and the forward play. And one other theory that I have is that when you have two sons playing on the team, you have Trey, Jet Howard and his brother, that can sometimes undermine the confidence of some of the other players. In fact, unless I don't know, and I don't know truly what's going on behind the scenes, but I would say that when you have a father's kids playing on a team, that sometimes can signal to the other guys, perhaps we don't have the right to assert as much as maybe what we should. And so maybe guys aren't willing to push out and bleed. And I think Jet is having a great year. He's shooting the ball really well. I saw the game at Penn State shooting the three ball and, you know, it was like five or six for six or something like that. But you want to grow the confidence in everybody. I would love to see Kobe Bufkin,
yeah,
to take off and become that leader of the team. I saw sparks of him this past game. You know, he went down and he put the ball out front and he had that slam out front on a break. And you know, he's got good hops, but it just doesn't seem to happen the whole game. And I just wished it would. I don't know. I would be out there pushing hard on them. I like Baker's attitude when he comes in the game. He's got that spark, that fire. I just wish they had it from all of them all the time. I wish I could see that more in all of them.
Hi, this is Jonathan from Lewis Jewelers. If you're in the market for a diamond, we can make the experience easy and stress-free. Not to mention, we can save you time and money. As a general manager, one of my roles is to hand-select every diamond that comes into our store. Don't shop alone. Come see me or one of my trusted advisors and find the perfect diamond today. Where Ann Arbor gets engaged, Lewis Jewelers.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, and I guess what I'm wondering is how is that a developable aspect of this thing? You talk about defense. I don't think that this team can play defense consistently enough to the level that they can just the other night when they were trying to challenge Purdue. They were hanging in there, but then, you know, you give up the easy bucket, you get the blow by. You, of all people, can address this because you were such a fantastic defensive player. A lot of people say, well, defense is effort, but it's got to be more than that, isn't it?
Yeah. You got to really want it, and you got to say no excuses. And somebody's got to have that attitude. Whoever the captain of that team is, you got to say, look, we can't have you messing up like that. You've got to get on each other and expect each other, hold each other accountable. That doesn't seem to be happening. I never see them really confronting each other for the sloppy play or the slow play and that sort of thing. So it has to come from within the attitude of the team. Now, the coaches, perhaps they could inspire, motivate them to do that. But if the kids really don't have, if it's their personality, then, you know, whether they want to or not. But if they're not really, you know, jaded that way, you see, that makes a difference. I mean, you know, you can have the size, you can have the skills, but if you don't have the attitude, the moxie, and all of those attributes that say, look, we are going, it's like watching a Michael Jordan play versus some other athletes that were 6'6", right? This guy didn't quit. He didn't take no for, you know, a Larry Bird. These guys who are Magic Johnson, these guys that you see that were so driven, right? So competitive. That's what we need. We need that competitive fire.
So that begs the question for me, going all the way back to the mid-70s, who were the confronters on those teams? And maybe you could summon up a story from back in those days to kind of illustrate the point.
Well, I was, of course, the confronter on our team, although I maintain a mild-mannered, you know, all-American attitude. I try to, you know, show sportsmanship. But when it came down time to, okay, are we going to go get this? I had that attitude, you know, mild-mannered, but yet tough and gritty when needed to be. Johnny Robinson was the same way. Steve Crotty was the same way. We had three of us that were that way. Ricky Green wasn't that feisty. Phil Hubbard wasn't that feisty. It was Crotty, Robinson, and myself on that team. You know, and you look at John Howard's team. It was John Howard. I mean, Juwan Howard. It was him. It was Chris Webber. It was Rose as well. They had that cocky, determined, take no prisoners, we'll come at you, we'll, if we need to, attitude. And that's what you need. You know, you don't have to be disrespectful. You have to show sportsmanship, but you know, you got to have that fire.
And you kind of have to have guys that are, will take it in the right way, I would think, if when you get after them, that it does fire them up and make them play harder.
Yeah. And I think we've lost something over the years when you see a lot of the transfers happening in the transfer portal and so forth. It's happening in football and basketball. Guys that don't get a chance to play, they transfer. You know, the young kid that transferred to Arizona State, he had that fire. You know, I saw him play. I mean, he had such an attitude when they played them this year. Man, that kid, he had fire. I forget his name now, but he was a guard, point guard, that left the team. If we could have kept him, my goodness gracious, that's what we could have benefited from. So, but he knew that other guards were coming into the team, right?
Yep, no doubt. Yeah. And you're referring, of course, to Frankie Collins, who was who really showed up in the tournament, and then everybody was looking forward to him taking over.
Right.
But you know, you got guys transferring in, and he decided, okay, well, maybe I won't, won't stick around for this.
I wished he'd stayed, and I think maybe he has some second thoughts because he wasn't starting that game when we played them this year either. You know, and so you look at that, if he had stayed, just think with the young man who had transferred, he got hurt early on. He would have been a starter by now. You know, bad move. You know, stay warrior. Stay with the team. You know, Bo Schembechler used to say, you know, you stay with us, you will be champions. That kind of attitude. And I wish that would become the norm instead of and I love the fact that, you know, our big center didn't leave, you know, to go to the pros. You know, they go so early, you know, play 1 year and then they're out. I mean, I wish that wasn't the case either. But it's just the way teams are now. That's the way the world is.
I remember hearing an interview with you and how excited you were when Juwan Howard was put in place. And certainly he has accomplished some things here. He's gotten to the Sweet 16. He's won the Big Ten. Yeah. With where he is right now, how difficult is this situation this year, and how has he tried to bring his team out of really being demoralized after a loss at Penn State like they experienced?
Yeah, I think he just has to accept the fact that they're not where they need to be, and it happens. It happens to any team. We had that at Michigan when I was a freshman. We had Henry Wilmore and Campy Russell and Ken Brady, John Lockhart, Ernie Johnson, you know, and myself, of course, and Joe Johnson and a few other people. That was a great team, but we were terrible. We were like middle of the pack and should have been like one or two with Indiana and Minnesota. Well, what did Johnny Orr do? Well, he regrouped the next year. That's what he has to do. Even with all the talent, we were just not able to put it together to play as a team back when I was a freshman at Michigan. Juwan's going to have to do the same thing, and we have got to be supportive of him, forgiving of him, so that he does, in fact, put the right players, put the right schemes on the table, and they win. You know, it's just it's unfortunate, but that's what happens. You know, sometimes for whatever reason, the teams don't gel and they don't have the right mix, and you don't win. So we got to accept that. Let's have one bad year. We'll give him one bad year, because I expected him to really cause a lot of young kids to want to play for the University of Michigan, which is what happened. You know, we've got some wonderful recruits. We've just got to keep our confidence. Don't fret, and then come back strong next year. And I think last year, the debacle with that Wisconsin coach, assistant coach, I think that really hurt his confidence and maybe perhaps some of the respect and confidence from the team. I don't know. I think that that did some damage to him too. He needs to rebound and recognize that, you know, that's done. This year, we're probably not going to win many more games and not going to be tough in the Big Ten championship series either. I don't think they're going to do that well either. I mean, it takes a lot to recover from what they've shown thus far. So,
okay. So, but they don't have the luxury of saying, okay, this is a bad year. You know, we'll look to next year. They are still stuck in this and trying to do something about it. Tell me, you noted that Hunter Dickinson, in your eyes, is not the kind of fire and brimstone guy that's going to get after it, get after people. What could he do with the games remaining in this Big Ten season and beyond, maybe, to lift this team?
Yeah, if he hasn't already figured it out, he has to build a compact with one or two of the other players, the better players of the team, and maybe it's Bufkin and him. They've got to have a conversation about the fact, look, we have got to take this to the next level. We can't afford to be this way. They've got to be the yin and yang. He's got to find that person. You know, I see him acting a little differently when a few of the other guys, I forget the other young forward and Baker, when they get on the floor, it seems that there's a certain level of intensity that comes out of him. He's got to find that same attitude and partnership with Kobe Bufkin. He's got to find that with someone else. They have got to be locked at the hip, just like Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen. You know, they've got to be locked, and he's got to find that. If he can't maintain the attitude of being gritty, he's got to find somebody else that can. You know, and they've got to help each other out. They got to talk each other up. That's what has to happen, because he doesn't have all of that. He has a different skill set. So Bufkin, you know, I don't know. Jet Howard, somebody has got to team up with this guy and say, okay, this is on us. Maybe it's the three of them. We got to have a conversation. Maybe they already are. I don't know. You know, I don't know what's happening behind the scenes, but that's just my theory.
Yeah. And it's got to hurt that, you know, you were counting on a grad point guard, and you're playing a guy who has some talent and has some fire, but was expected to play maybe 10, 12 minutes a game this year, filling in. And Doug McDaniel, I thought it was a little bit telling when he tweeted out about, you know, the fans and how they were fickle and things like that. I just think these days you got to block all that out.
Be quiet. You're a freshman. You have no right to even speak up and speak out about anything. You haven't arrived. You haven't achieved anything yet. You got to just, you know, somebody needs to check him and check him hard. Whoever the senior captain or whoever that is, you have a conversation with the young man and say, what in the world are you talking about? You know, you haven't shown us consistently yet that you can bring the ball up the floor. You can attack the defense and, you know, all the things that some of the great point guards have done. Come on, man. You're still learning. So, I think that what's happened is people have gotten spoiled with the fact that they come to these teams and they think because, you know, I was recruited by Juwan Howard and they had such great players before us that are playing in the NBA, then now is my shot. Now I'm as good as they are. Well, you got to prove that, you know. You can't just come in there and think that's because I've arrived, you know. I have all of what it takes to be that stellar athlete and perform at the high level. No, and it's proven, you know. It's proven. They're not there yet.
Well, and speaking of not there, I would say most people are looking at this as being a not there team when the NCAA tournament rolls around.
Yeah.
They will brave talk and they will say, you know, hey, we can get on a run, we can get it done. And, you know, you never want to rule things out for young men, but certainly, as you have noted, things aren't looking good in that direction. And if this team is not going to the tournament, if it doesn't get on that roll, what are the important things for it to really hone in on and improve in this back half of the Big Ten season?
They've got to take a hard look at themselves, look themselves in the mirror and say, we're responsible for this. It's nobody else's fault but ours. And they got to do some soul searching. And they got to say to themselves, we're going to end on a good note. Bufkin's got to say to himself, you know, Hunter Dickens has got to say to himself, this is not us. And they've got to recommit themselves to finishing strong and recognize the fact that, okay, perhaps if we lock in, we can win a few more games. We can go undefeated the rest of the year. They've got to have that attitude. Now, proof's in the pudding.
Sure.
But it's got to start with those two guys, in my opinion. Those are the leaders of the team. And if they can get the other guys to rally around that, they can't depend on Jed Howard. He's a freshman. Regardless of how talented he is, he's just not at that level of being able to exude the leadership and the confidence to make that, you know, contagious amongst the other players. It takes a lot for a freshman. You know, sometimes you get gifted athletes, you know, like a Michael Jordan or a Magic Johnson. I've said those names before, who just have it, you know, they just exude it. But we don't have that. We don't have that player.
So what is the coach's role in all of this? I know after the last game, Juwan Howard was trying to maybe deflect some criticism from his players and take it on himself. He said, obviously, I didn't get this team prepared well enough to play well enough and that sort of thing.
I think he takes too much ownership of the problem. I think that that's his problem. I think at the end of the day, he has actually, I would say, babied that team and actually covered for that team almost to a fault. I watch and observe him. He almost sometimes act like one of the players. You know, you got to back away, be the coach, let them be the team. Let them take responsibility for their behavior, for their actions sometimes. You know, you suck it up. You know, quit covering for these kids. That's what I think is happening. He's not on the floor anymore. And I think the sooner he gets that point where he says, it's your problem, you fix it. You know, you don't have to be negative in the press or anything like that. You don't have to embarrass a player. I saw that one time. One of the players, the young freshman, the tall guy, I forget the kid's name, kind of, he came at him at one point through a game and kind of pulled him out, yanked him out, and it was very obvious. I don't think that's the behavior you need to have towards the player, especially a kid like that who's just, you know, got all of this physical talent and ability. He just needs to, you know, have a year under his belt. He'll be fine, you know. But I think he can be a little bit enabling to the team's, acceptance of the fact that perhaps it's somebody else's fault and not ours.
All right. Maybe signal to the bullpen for Wayman Britt to come in and give a fiery speech at some point.
Well, yeah. I would love to have that opportunity to talk, but I'm sure he wouldn't want that to happen. Just like Beilein, you know, I remember going down, I would send him notes and text messages and things like that. Sometimes he would listen, though, and in fact, it helped it helped back when he were having some problems with a couple of the players. I spotted some things and I shared that with him. My hope would be that Juwan would call me too. You know, I'm here. You know, they know how to get a hold of me. Lisa Nicholson knows how to get in touch with me. They know where I'm at. Okay, well, what do you see? You know, help me, you know, because you've been there. You know what it's like, you know, but nobody calls. You know, only you, John.
And Tom. Well, and we're getting all the wisdom as a result of it. So, like I said, not only for basketball, but also with football. You mentioned seeing Jim Harbaugh last summer. And now a little bit of a sigh of relief from Michigan fans in that Sean Payton has now been hired as the head coach of the Denver Broncos. That came out this afternoon. Okay. And so the assumption is, okay, this is done. Jim's back. We're going to have another big-time year in Ann Arbor on the football field. Put in perspective a little what the last 2 years have meant after the dry spell that this program has had. And is it, I guess I asked this of Tom Crawford a week or so ago, is the juice worth the squeeze when you have this, you've had for two straight years, this, is he going, is he staying, all that kind of thing?
Well, I think he's staying. I think that he loves that team and they love him. I mean, he's got a special team, and why wouldn't you want to stay there and see it through? You know, that team was here in Grand Rapids this past summer, and they had a wonderful stay over at the President Ford Museum. And Jim Hackett and I were there. We gave him a little talk and we toured him around and so on and so forth. And we hung out with Jim Harbaugh. Man, what a wonderful, wonderful group of kids. And Jim is just a great guy from my standpoint, man. He's just a, you know, people I think have got him wrong. I think they misunderstood what the guy was about. He loves those players, and he's a player's coach, you know. And he has surrounded himself with some really great assistants now. So I think that, you know, he is going to stay, you know, at Michigan, at least see this team through. You know, the players that he has with him now are like his kids. And so I don't think he's going to leave. I think he's going to see it through. And I think next year they'll come back and they'll be successful again. And watch out. We could be the national champion. I think we would have been the national champs this year if he'd made that decision to throw that flag when that touchdown had occurred. And I think that he probably underestimated the resilience of that team and thought, well, we'll get them in the second half. No, Jim, throw the flag. I think he's learned from that.
Yeah. Say a little bit, if you would, about the Ohio State football game the past 2 years. I mean, it was such misery for a decade and a half, really. And I've talked to former Michigan football players that said, even a year ago, I watched that game with tears in my eyes.
Yeah.
How fired up do you get about Michigan, Ohio State football?
I'm so fired up. I couldn't stop yelling. My dog, I have a dog, an English Springer Spaniel named Britta, and she was like, what is the matter with you? And I'm yelling and screaming. My wife says, what's the matter? What's the matter? I says, look at what's happening. Look at what's happening. They're going to beat them. And oh my gosh, it was such a wonderful thing to see, you know. Oh, how I hate Ohio State. I mean, that's that, you know, even at the basketball team level, you know, we knew what time it was when we played against Ohio State. And it was up to us to make sure that we never lost against those guys. And, you know, to see us now finally coming back to prominence, that's where we should have been all along. You know, we should have never sunk as low as we did. And it's so great to see us back again, you know. And we have to keep that mantle of being the leaders and the best, period.
Yeah.
And Jim understands that, and now he's got the right team behind him, the coaches, the assistants, and all the other folk around him. And we just got to keep loving on him and telling him, look, we're with you, support you, and let's do this, you know.
Yeah. Well, of course, you were in school right at the heart of the 10-year war. I mean, from the heartbreak of a Dennis Franklin to, you know, that breakthrough in 76. Oh, that you have to, I mean, I assume you had some really strong football memories then.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. I was good friends with a lot of the football players, the men, I forget what they called them, the guys that had
the mellow men of Michigan.
Yeah, those guys. There was my friend Clint Azarig and Donnell Coleman, and those guys were my friends. In fact, Donnell Coleman and I would go back and forth to Flint and work there at the gym factory summers. We did that one or two summers when I was at Michigan, summer job. But anyway, we were in close contact. They loved our team. We loved their team. We loved what they were doing. And, you know, we brought a whole different vibe. And I respected Bo Schembechler and what he was attempting to do with that team. And I'm so happy that they bought into that, you know, that attitude, you know, we're going to be the best. And we need to bring that back. You know, it's contagious, man. It's contagious. Those guys felt it, knew it, believed it, and then demonstrated it. Okay. And that carried over to the rest of the program. So Now I see it happening again. I hope that they can be contagious and influence the basketball team once again. You know, we took pride. We wanted to be better than the football team. The football team wanted to be better than us. You know, You're not going to outdo us. We're going to go to the championship games. That's the attitude that we have. And they were like, okay, we'll take it to the next level. We'll go to the Rose Bowl. We'll be the best team too in the country. That was the attitude back and forth. That's how we were.
That's great. Good stuff. I would be remiss if I did not, before I let you go, ask you about the NIL, about these collectives. You know, I remember Bo Schembechler very clearly. You know, room, board, grant and aid. That's what you get here. And now you got a situation where Blake Corum could see seven figures as a college senior.
Yeah.
Your thoughts about how all of this has developed?
Well, you know, it's unfortunate that it had to come to this, but, you know, it was inevitable that at some point, based on what's happening in the world of sports, you know, the billions of dollars that are being won on national contracts, TV and radio and so forth, and all the other advertisers, the equipment companies, the shoe companies, and so on and so forth that feed the beast. And players weren't being fairly, I would say, compensated, not monetarily, but if you look at the coaches' contracts, you look at what some of these people are actually getting paid to do, you say, wow. And why is that? Well, it's because of my brand. It's because of who I am as a player and so on and so forth. Well, if we can figure out a way to fairly compensated, doesn't have to be monetarily, but in some way, maybe put some dollars away for, you know, when you get out of college, do something, but show some sort of way to level the playing field so that I'm not putting my life out on the line and you benefit. I mean, back when I played University of Michigan, Johnny Orr, Bill Frieder, we were not expected to win, but both of those guys, Coach Orr got a huge contract at Iowa State. Bill Frieder went on to Arizona State. They became millionaires. Millionaires. Mm-hmm. Well, what happened to a lot of the athletes at University of Michigan when I played? If you weren't a first-round pick, you weren't going to become a millionaire, you know? And I know the fact is that Bill Frieder, if it was not for my relationship with him, he would have never come to the University of Michigan, right? Mm-hmm. He made out like a bandit. And that's not right. To have, you know, he was a good coach, but Bo Schembechler figured it out. It's not about how much money you make. It's not about who gives you the biggest. It's about how many games you win and what your love and affinity is for the University of Michigan. So I think that in some ways it's right to do. But now people like Blake Corum, who are saying, look, I'm going to donate and I'm going to give some of this money away. I don't need that kind of cash. I'm going to use it as a charity. Now that is exactly what we need to see. I wish the coaches had that same attitude, you know, that they would give away like Jim Harbaugh has been doing. If we could have that same kind of attitude or make policies that say this is what you're going to do, you know, if you're going to be a benefactor of that, you know, you don't spend all the money, you put it away, you use it for charity, those kinds of things. I think that's the way to get around.
No doubt about it. And J.J. McCarthy doing the same thing, setting up a charity. Yeah. It is really good to see. Right. I know this much. Wayman Britt was worth $1 million to Michigan basketball teams in the mid-70s, and you have been worth $1 million on the Wolverine Live. I'll tell you what, I want to do this again because it's been all kinds of fun this hour, and we will have Tom Crawford with us the next time, Lord willing. I appreciate you, Wayman, for joining us and everything that you brought to Michigan basketball and your thoughts continuing on about this program.
Well, I thank you. I love Michigan. I love the state of Michigan too. I love this team. And my hope and prayer is that they rebound from their woes and they come back and they finish the team stronger than what people expect, and that they rebound next year and become a great team again, like we always expect. You know, the leaders and the best.
You bet.